You're listening to Minimalish, a podcast where we talk about simplifying our stuff, our lives, our motherhood, all in a realistic way so that we can make room for what matters. We're not here for perfectly tidy homes or seeing how much we can possibly declutter. We're here for living with less. Realistically, it's going to look different for all of us, but we're not really focused on how our version of minimalism looks anyways. We're focused on how it feels. I'm your host, Desiree. I'm a mom to two and on my own journey of living with a little less clutter so I can have more space for an intentional life. I'm no expert, and I like to think of this as a corner of the internet where we're learning and growing together. So let's walk towards a more simple and intentional life. Here's this week's episode. Welcome back to Minimalish. I am so excited to be bringing you the first guest episode of 2023. Today I'm sharing my conversation with Linda McGurk. She's a Swedish-American writer and author of There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather and The Open Air Life, which is her most recent book. She's a passionate advocate for the Nordic outdoor tradition, free lute sleeve, which I know I'm saying it wrong, and I kind of laugh at myself several times in this conversation for saying it incorrectly, but she runs the blog Rain or Shine Mama, where she shares tips and inspiration for outdoor play every day, regardless of the weather. And not just play for your kids, but for you too. Today we talk about the benefits of getting outside more, not just if you are in bad weather or in a, you know, wintry time of year right now, but all year long. This conversation is especially helpful for January, at least where I am in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, or anywhere where you might be experiencing a winter climate at the moment, but it can be applied to any season of the year. This conversation is not an easy one for me because I personally am not outdoorsy at all. I prefer the indoors. I prefer staying cozy and warm inside, and in the hot heat of the summer, some days I even prefer staying inside as well. So I have really tried to change my mindset on that and change my actions as well. And this conversation has been a big part of that. So if you haven't noticed, this has kind of been a theme on the podcast over the last several months. We talked about hygge, which part of that deals with embracing every season. So this conversation kind of takes it in a different direction and looks at, what are the benefits of this? What are the benefits of embracing each season, not just in general, but outdoors? It gives us a why behind any kind of motivation you might be trying to give yourself to get outside in colder weather or just bad weather in general. And it gives us some activities that we can do, some ideas, because free lute sleeve is a certain type of spending time outside, or it's a certain way of spending time outside, I should say. So we're going to dive into that. We're going to get into all of it in this conversation. I really think this episode is beneficial if you struggle with seasonal affective disorder or seasonal depression. If the weather affects your mental health in any way, this episode is a great one. And if you just want to get outdoors more because it has several benefits, this episode is for you. We, of course, talk about how we can be getting outside more in any weather with our kids as well. I learned so much from Linda, so let's just dive into our conversation. Linda, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast today. Before we dive in to a conversation that is definitely interesting and new to me, I would love to hear more about who you are and what you do.
Hi, Desiree. Thank you for having me on. I'm so excited to come and talk about my passion, which is outdoor life, friluftsliv, as we call it in Sweden. I am a writer, and I grew up in Sweden, but I've also lived in the States for 15 years. Just moved back to Sweden about 4 years ago. And I have two daughters who are 11 and 14, and two bonus daughters who are younger than that. And I wrote my first book after my first kids were born, and we lived in Indiana, because I noticed there was a bit of a culture clash coming from a very outdoorsy culture, and then moving to Indiana and finding that everybody kind of hibernated in the winter, and I was kind of viewed as the odd one for being outside playing with my kids in the winter. And so that was my first book, There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather. And then I just published my second book, The Open Air Life, recently. So that's what I do. That's kind of the short version of it. But I'm sure we'll get into more of it as we go along here.
Yeah, for sure. And we were just talking before we hit record, and I was kind of mentioning that the culture I grew up in, just here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is probably similar weather to Indiana, I would imagine, is just that, you know, I have always stayed indoors in the winter, and I always end up with, like, especially lately, like the past few years, I've really felt that kind of seasonal affective disorder kind of feeling. And I know that part of that is just, you know, being holed up inside. Of course, there's not as much sunlight and everything as well. But so I'm really excited to hear more about your book and your perspective with, I'm going to butcher this. I was trying. Could you tell me how you say it again? How do you say it?
Yeah, it's Friluftsliv.
Okay, I definitely can't say it like that.
Okay, so like Friluftsliv. That's the Americanized pronunciation.
I know. I've been challenging myself here on the podcast lately because I had a couple episodes about hygge, and I'm like, I'm not saying that correctly. And yeah. Now I'm trying to say this. I'm like, well, this is rough. Okay, so Friluftsliv.
Yeah, that's really good.
Okay, okay. Yeah. We'll just go with it. So yeah, let's break down this concept a little bit. So your book, The Open Air Life, and the subtitle says Discover the Nordic Art of Friluftsliv, which I know that's not right, but we're just going to go with it. Yeah. Embrace Nature Every Day. It talks all about this, you know, Nordic concept. So I want to know more about this concept. In your book, you like break down there's kind of these 10, maybe tenets of it. But just whatever, like a rundown of what is it? What does it mean?
So I call it the outdoorsy cousin of hygge in the book. Just like hygge doesn't have a really good translation in English. That's why I call it the open air life too, to give it some sort of English concept. And I think that kind of explains it pretty well. It's about being outside and experiencing nature and both the natural landscape and the cultural landscape without any pressure to achieve or compete. It often revolves around sort of very simple activities outside, like going for a walk or using your nearby nature areas. So it could be anything from, go for a walk around the neighborhood to backpacking in the wilderness and pretty much anything in between. But it's also not just like a set of different activities. It's about connecting with nature on a deeper level and sort of understanding that we're one with nature. And it's about like learning useful skills and, you know, getting to know the plants and the animals in nature. And, it could be things like riding a bike or camping, foraging, cold swimming, cooking over the fire is a common way of practicing Friluftsliv. And typically these activities don't require a lot of money. I also call it slow nature. That Friluftsliv is a sort of slow nature, just like we have slow parenting and slow food. And that's where the whole, you know, non-competitiveness comes in. It usually involves some sort of physical activity, not always, but usually. And it's also about disconnecting from our electronic devices. But you can practice Friluftsliv both in the city by using parks, for example, and other green spaces or urban trails, things like that. But also in the countryside and of course the wilderness. But the focus is really on trying to make it, like a habit. So that's why the emphasis is really on using your nearby nature, because that's something that you can do on a daily basis or a near daily basis. So that's kind of a quick rundown of it.
It really simplifies it. It doesn't have to be. You talk in the book about, you know, if you look up the word, and on Instagram, there's like over a million tags of people maybe like on the this beautiful mountaintop, or
right.
lone hiker, you know, in this beautiful landscape. And we might think like that is out of my league, because one,
right.
you know, I typically stay inside all winter. So how am I going to get to that point? But it can just be simple, kind of like building a habit of just being outside.
And tuning into the cycles of nature. And, you know, that's going to look different, you know, depending on where you live. So it depends on your climate and your biome. So where I live, we have very little daylight in the wintertime. It starts getting dark by 3:30 or so in the winter. And it doesn't get light till like 9 in the morning. So we only have, you know, about 6 hours of sunlight or daylight. We don't always get sun. So you just kind of adapt to that. And for sure, I am, compared with summer, I'm outside less in the wintertime. But that's also me adapting to the natural cycles of nature. And granted, we still go outside in the dark and just put on high-vis vests and headlamps. But ideally, it's better to be outside during the day. It just helps us align with nature more and our own circadian rhythms, which I talk about in the book as well. That it's important for our sleep, to regulate our sleep. It helps to be outside during daylight hours. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I kind of want to dive into just the reasoning for this and the why, maybe the benefits. There's probably, you know, two groups of people that are listening. One group that loves the outdoors already, that enjoys going camping and foraging and everything like that. It's like, yes, I love this. I can connect with this. And then there's another group who maybe feels like, you know, this is not me. This is like, I need a little bit more of what are the benefits of this? Like, why would I push myself to this change to where I'm getting outside more, especially as we're in the winter months? Like, we can all, you know, feel that there's a benefit in the summer of being outside. A lot of people feel happier in the summer getting, not everyone, but getting more, you know, sunlight and just being able to do more outside naturally.
Right.
So in the book, you'd start the book in a very extremely relatable way, I think, to many people, talking about your work day and your work life being inundated by technology through the day, along with just like the mental load of life. And you talk a little bit about how like this modern lifestyle that many of us have affects our mental health. So how does Free Loose Leave, how can regularly being in nature and connecting with nature change our mental health?
Yeah. So first of all, about 80% of the people in the industrialized world lives in cities today. So that's a huge, huge percentage that lives in, oftentimes, in an environment that is just not good for our health, neither our mental health or our physical health. Our cities, you know, they're full of traffic and there's crowds. You know, it's just not a natural, it's a far cry from the way we used to live our lives on the savannah. We're plugged into various electronic devices all day, many of us, or maybe stuck working inside a factory with no natural lighting. And all this is sort of contributing to and stress, which is a huge factor as well. Which all of this is contributing to, you know, I even want to call it a mental health crisis. We have a lot of people who suffer from anxiety and depression today. It's it's epidemic, and our living environments are not helping this at all. But friluftsliv is actually a practical way of bringing more balance to your life, and part of it is just by spending time outside. We know that it benefits our bodies and brains in multiple ways. I mean, there's the physical activity, which it can help reduce our risk of several types of cancer, can help our blood pressure go down. It affects our cortisol levels, so that contributes to decreased stress levels. We feel relaxed outside. The science is there. That's what we know that for a fact. And then there are different theories of why that is. And that's where it's a little more hazy, right? There are different theories. One of the referenced one is the biophilia theory, which holds that we're automatically drawn to natural areas because nature, traditionally, that's what provides us with the means to be alive. Like plants give us food and water, while it keeps us hydrated. And so our bodies know that we're dependent on nature for our survival. So that's just one. And then there's another one is tension restoration theory, which holds that we're in our lives in general, we're forced to have a lot of directed attention. When we work, for example, we're working on complex problems and, for example, navigating busy traffic that is causing stress on our nervous systems because we have to focus so hard on what we're doing. Whereas in nature, we can allow ourselves to just kind of be, and we can just sort of engage in this sort of soft fascination of nature. And so those are two of the main theories, but there are many others. Yeah. So for me, friluftsliv is just a very easy self-care routine. I mean, it's more than that to me. It means a lot more than that, but that's, I would say, is my most important self-care routine. It's how I keep my balance, my life in balance. When I feel the pressure from work or just the stress of life in general, I go for a walk. And that also really opens up a lot of, creative flows. So a lot of times, like, solutions to problems come to me when I'm out for a walk. You know, I think if more people engaged in this, I think we'd see a lot less of these mental health issues that we're having today. And actually, I mean, there's research to back that up as well, that being out in nature can actually reduce anxiety and depression to the point where it's even more effective than pharmaceuticals. And I think that really says a lot.
Yeah, that's so good. And it's definitely enough to make me think, like, okay, I was talking to you about this before we hit record too, is over the past several years, I have sort of each year kind of branched out a little bit more of, I'm going to get outside more in the winter. And, the first thing I did was I bought a pair of boots that I could feel like, I'm not going to slip and slide trying to walk out my driveway.
Yeah.
If it's snowy or icy. And, just like building up little by little. And that's the first thing that I did, was just start to take walks and start with short walks. Last year I was very pregnant in the winter and I was like not out much because of that.
Yeah.
But this year I'm in that same mindset of like, okay, how can I get out more?
I think that's a great way of doing it. Start with baby steps, start with the things that are doable to you today. And a lot of times, just getting a little bit of extra gear can help get you there. Cause I think a lot of people fret about winter because they're just not dressed properly. You're not supposed to be cold just because it's cold outside. So having proper gear is everything. We might think to equip our kids for winter, but might forget, you know, I know a lot of parents who forget about themselves. So if it's cold out, I'll wear snow pants outside. I don't, like, I'd much rather have snow pants on than be cold. So I think dressing for the weather is like super important. So that's like one of the main things to start with. Make sure that you have a wardrobe that allows you to get outside in all types of weather.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, I think that was a big step for me. It's just, okay, I need to actually be able to dress for this, because my mindset in the past has been keep myself outside as little as possible. So, I mean, I don't enjoy bundling up all of these different things on and just like having to run to my car. So in the past, I'd be like, okay, I'm just going to put something on that will get me to my car and then get me to the destination, and I'll get out of the cold as fast as possible. Yeah. What are some like mindset shifts that can help us kind of get to that point if we are used to avoiding the cold weather?
Yeah, I think just getting into that rhythm. At first, you might have to fake it to make it, you know, set a goal for yourself, even if it's just 15 minutes per day, and try to really just do it. And I think once you start doing it, you will start craving it. You'll notice your mind clearing and your focus improving, and just the energy from being outside in the fresh air. I have days when I struggle too, but I always, just knowing that I'm going to feel better afterwards, that's always my main motivation. I know I'm going to feel better, so I make myself go outside either way. And there are days when the weather is really difficult and, you know, I really have to force myself to get outside. And then those instances, getting back inside can actually be a treat too, because that makes you appreciate the indoors more, I think. So to me, just experiencing those contrasts of having really harsh weather and then coming inside in the warm house and maybe lighting a fire in the fireplace. And that's like has become a sort of a welcome routine and to me in the wintertime, because I don't appreciate the fire as much if I haven't been outside before. So I think sort of tuning into those contrasts can really help. And then just try to decide that you're going to have a positive attitude about it. Like I grew up with the saying, there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothes. So I've kind of been indoctrinated with this since childhood. So I could see how that wouldn't come naturally to you if you didn't grow up like that. But I think you can create it for yourself in adulthood too. And it really is life changing, I think. And also another trick could be to really try to do things that you enjoy, like on a nice weather day, bring a treat too, especially if you have kids. If it's hard to motivate kids to come outside too, like hot chocolate is my go-to in wintertime. Or if you have a favorite place that you like, where you like to hang out, try to cherish seeing that place changing over the course of the seasons. There's something to that as well.
Yeah, those are all such good tips. Speaking of kids, and just in general, I would love to hear just some ideas of, you know, some things that we might do to experience Free Loops Live. And what are some ways that we can involve our kids in that as well?
So I think one of my favorite ways of experiencing Free Loops Live is really cooking outside together with others. I say together with others because I know one of the keys to getting kids outside is having other kids outside. They really thrive on that group dynamic, and having other families outside also sort of normalizes outdoor play in all types of weather. And it's just more fun, I think, for everybody involved. And granted, you can't pull together a big group every time, but see if you can use at least some time on the weekend to go on an outing somewhere where you can have an outdoor meal, and you can involve the kids, depending on their ages, of course. Try to involve them in the planning. See what they would want to cook. Maybe they can help select recipes. And for the littler kids, like we all know, they love grilling marshmallows and other things over the fire. You can also challenge yourself by trying to learn new things together. Also, some bush skills like whittling or how to build different types of fire, my main advice is really to keep it simple. Like try to do whatever you can do close by, because the most important part is that you get out the door. So if it is going to the kid's favorite park, even if it's, 4 inches of snow outside, then do that and see what it's like to play on the equipment when there's snow on it, because the kids are going to they're going to notice that it's a lot different, in different types of seasons. And do bring treats, like I said earlier. And also the clothing is key to make sure that they're all comfortable and that they have their basic needs met. That's important to keep them happy. If they're not, I know kids aren't always gung-ho about going outside. And if that's the case, then I try to give them like a couple of different choices that, that I can live with. And they don't have to be, elaborate activities. It could just be like, let's go outside and see if we can find X, whatever you might find on a walk, like near your house. The younger the kids are, the more the focus should be on just free play rather than setting a specific goal or having like a certain destination, or because that can that can lead to power struggles, and you know, you just have to take it at their pace, and that their pace is usually slow if they're toddlers. They're typically more interested in things that are going on the side of the trail than in walking. So so those are just a few ideas. Like I said, don't focus mainly on the activity. Just try and do what's accessible to you in your neighborhood. Bring a treat to make sure the kids are dressed properly. And maybe the most important part is your attitude. Be positive about it and make it a part of your family rhythm so that the kids come to expect it. That will make it easier to get outside on a regular basis. The fact that the kids know that that's part of your routine, and whatever you end up doing, you know, that's kind of secondary. The kids are usually pretty good about coming up with things to do once they get used to being outside on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's, you know, when you said about like the younger the kids are, the less structured you need to be. And that rings true for me. I know as when my daughter was little, I could, and she's only five, but when she was even younger, it was easy to just open the door and be outside. And she's only five, but for whatever reason, it's a little harder. It's harder to convince her of anything. <You know? laughs> it's harder to do that. And I can already, and probably partly my own doing, but I can already see her attitude change with the weather of just like, oh, I don't like when it's cold. Even just like, this is kind of a different thing, but I have been trying to convince her to go for walks with me without me pushing her in anything, because I do have a baby as well. And at first we got like a double stroller that she could just like sit on the little bench, but I was like, okay, come on, we gotta start walking, you know.
Yeah,
I can't push like 50 pounds here.
Right.
So just like looking for something, like trying to find something, a scavenger hunt of a very simplified one really has helped. So that suggestion that you gave makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And this might come across as odd, but my kids actually like picking up trash. So that's something that we often do when we're outside. And they've done that since they were little. I suppose I got them started on that. But a lot of times we'll bring a bag and we'll pick up some trash on the way. And I feel like that way we're making a contribution to our community while also getting fresh air and physical activity. So it's a win-win, I think.
We've already been talking about this a little bit, but I would love to hear kind of some last encouragements for the person who might not, you know, find themselves particularly outdoorsy, maybe spends their time mostly inside. What are some like simple steps to just dip our toes into this lifestyle?
Yeah, I think as I mentioned before, I think trying to set a goal for yourself, maybe even joining a challenge like the 1000 hours outside challenge. If you think that's too big of a number, then set your own number. And start where you are. So if you have a backyard, that's a great place to start. You can even do some winter cookouts or your local green spaces. But I really think the most important change is in our heads. You know, it's the attitude. I think that's the most important change that you can make. And just knowing, like, take some time to read some books on the topic and really look at the research, because it's so convincing that, if you don't feel like going outside after reading my book, I don't know what what will. But I think that's a good motivator as well, like just seeing what it's done for other people. And I write about people who have been burnt out from work and come back to work from just after being in different Friluftsliv therapy programs, and my neighbor who also burned out, who started doing cold baths, another man in Stockholm who did a camp out for, you know, once a week, just because he wanted to get outside more and practice his Friluftsliv skills. So he decided to camp out once a week for a whole year. So there are a lot of inspirational stories if you feel like you need that boost. But really, the best way of I think getting convinced is just getting out there and experiencing it for yourself. I mean, you mentioned seasonal affective disorder before, and I think we know that's something that affects a lot of people. And being outside is a very effective way of preventing that or reducing symptoms of seasonal affective disorders. So definitely, you know, like I said, there are even studies showing that it's more effective than pharmaceuticals. And the best part, obviously, you know, no side effects. So anybody can do this, even in the cities. You know, you don't have to live in a wilderness area. The more remote an area is, the more removed it is from the stressful city life, the more restorative it's going to be. But you can definitely find these pockets of green space in the cities as well. And just being near trees, for example, can have immense health benefits. So my advice is just make up your mind and do it. And I think once you start doing it, you'll start craving it.
And I can definitely vouch for your book that if someone needs to convince themselves into it, they can have you convince them into it with Open Air Life. Because even just like the first chapter, I remember reading the intro in the first chapter, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is huge. Because you include so much research and so many stories of how this is so beneficial. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a huge lifestyle shift to start with. You don't have to, if you have like never camped in your life, you don't have to go and, you know, pitch a tent in the wilderness, but you can just be outside.
Yeah. To me, it's really come gradually. Even though I grew up with this culture, I didn't grow up in a hardcore adventuring family by any means. And I wasn't, and I still don't consider myself hardcore by any means, but I'm learning new things and I'm learning to appreciate new things. Like I've tried winter camping in the past year, and that was really fun. I tried camping out by myself once, which was also, you know, something that I had wanted to challenge myself with, but never tried before. And just in the past like 4 years, I started foraging for mushrooms. So that's another thing that I've just gotten into in the past few years. And I'm 44, and so it's never too late to learn. And that's another aspect of Friluftsliv that I really love, is that you can learn at your own pace, and you don't have to be an expert. All you really need is to have a genuine interest in nature and wanting to be a part of it. And I think the rest will come naturally.
Yes, so good. Well, I've loved this conversation, and, you know, I am just going to refer everyone listening to your book if they want to learn more about it, because I feel like we could talk about so many more aspects of it if we had time. But I do have two questions that I like to ask every guest. And the first one is, what is something that you're simplifying right now?
I have spent some time in the past year and a half, almost 2 years now, really simplifying the way I dress. So I did another challenge a couple years ago to not buy any new clothes for an entire year. And I was just amazed at what that did to my whole attitude towards clothes. And I realized that I could simplify my wardrobe by a lot just by focusing on more sort of multifunctional clothes and really drastically reduce the amount of new clothes that I buy. So I think by dressing smarter, I've been able to really cut down on, like I said, the amount of clothes that I buy. And I think of that from an environmental standpoint. I think that's important. We have, like, our wardrobes are far bigger today than they were just like in the 1980s. So I think from an environmental standpoint, I think there's definitely some simplifying to be done in the average wardrobe. I think most of us probably have far more clothes than we need.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also cuts down on, like, so many decisions that you have to make.
Yes, I know. Right.
And a lot of work, like laundry, yeah, and, you know, folding, putting away.
Yes.
So yeah. I love that. My second question is, what is something that you're loving right now? It can be anything.
Yeah. So since we're in the winter now, or just about to hit winter here, I got two things. Cold swimming is another thing that I've gotten into just in the past 4 or 5 years, which I'm loving because it's gives me such a natural high and so much energy. So it's my favorite way of ending my work week. On a Friday night, I like to go for a cold plunge. And the other thing is wool clothing. Speaking of clothing, the few garments that I do buy these days are often wool, because they are just so useful, both for outdoor or for friluftsliv and being outdoors, but also to just being warm inside in the winter time. So I also love that they don't need washed very often. So it's a good for the environment from that perspective as well. They you can just usually air them out and just do like a little spot cleaning. So yeah, definitely recommended. I'm just have to make sure that the wool has been like ethically sourced. That's the only thing.
Yeah. Okay, I have to ask a little bit more about the swimming, because
yes,
I had a guest on a few weeks ago, and whenever this goes out, it will be months, but she was talking about winter bathing. She's from Denmark.
Uh-huh.
So, okay, do you do this outside?
Yes.
I know she does. Okay, so, and she does it naked. Is that mm-hmm. how you do it as well? Okay.
Well, I prefer to. And if you go to a communal sauna, a lot of the cities here have communal saunas with cold swimming, then typically it's clothing optional. But I live in a neighborhood and I share the beach with my neighbors. So I typically wear my swimsuit. I'm sure some people do some skinny dipping down there too, but we do get some dog walkers, and to avoid any embarrassment, I usually keep my swimsuit on. But yes, of course, the optimal way of swimming in the Nordic tradition, at least, is naked, because then you don't have any barriers between you and the water. It's just, you're just completely immersed. And you can really feel the water on your skin. So, yeah.
And how long, how long are you in there typically? Is it short? Is it?
It just depends. But I try to go for at least like 10 deep breaths. And some days that's harder than others. It just depends on the temperature of the water. In the winter, when the water is freezing, 10 breaths is a long time.
Yeah.
But if the water is around, say, 50 degrees, then I can be in for several minutes, like 5, 6, 7 minutes. I never time myself. because I think it's not, the main point is not to force yourself to be in there certain times. I try to do my some breath work and just go by the amount of breaths instead.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. I just had to ask more about that because that has, yeah. You know, she mentioned it and then you did. And I'm like, okay, I just need to know,
yeah.
know more about this.
It actually, it's an old tradition here, but it really had it surged in popularity during the pandemic, actually, because it's also known to sort of improve your immune system. It sort of jolts your immune system into action. Yeah, like I said, it's just a natural high. And of course, during the pandemic, outdoor activities, you know, became more and more popular because a lot of the indoor venues were just closed down. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for explaining it more. And also just thank you so much for your time. Thank you for all that you're just contributing to the world with writing your book. I think, you know, anyone who reads it is going to have just so many benefits if they take action on it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Last week on the podcast, we talked about small changes and how we don't need to overhaul our entire lives to have like an effective New Year's resolution. And instead of resolutions, we could just choose one small thing that is going to benefit us, is going to make us better for the people around us, for ourselves. And I think today's conversation could definitely be something that we could take and craft into one small change that we could make this year. Starting in the winter is probably like the most resistance we are going to have to this, right? If we decided to make one small change and spending, I don't know, 5 to 20 minutes outside a day just being. And I say 5 minutes because I don't know, some days it's negative, like below. I don't know if I could have spent more than 5 minutes outside on Christmas around here because it was zero or below that. And I'm sure people do, but I don't know. I don't know that I could. Something realistic, something that is realistic for you. And maybe it's setting that time for 5 minutes now, 5 minutes plus, right? On the warmer winter days, can get out longer, but then gradually increasing it throughout the year to kind of get yourself used to it. I don't know. I just think it would be a great small change to make, especially if it's something that you know you need and you know could benefit you and could benefit your mental health. For me, when Linda was talking about taking walks, that is something that I absolutely love to do. I love to take a walk by myself or with my dog and just be able to think or pray or not listening to anything, but just having these, usually it's a short walk. If I'm by myself, it's not typically long, but it's really impactful to just have that time to decompress and be quiet and only listen to the sounds around me from the outdoors and, I mean, my neighborhood because I'm typically walking in my neighborhood. So that is one small change that I think is doable for myself, for probably for most of us, is to spend 5 minutes outside taking a couple of deep breaths or taking a 5 minute plus walk, depending on the weather, right? Depending on what your circumstances are. If you have kids around and you are in sole care of them, you might not be able to take a 5 minute walk in like freezing weather. But again, like Linda said, you know, there are ways around being outside in the cold with kids. Dress them for it, dress yourself for it. But if we're just dipping our toes in, why not just step outside, take a few deep breaths in the fresh air? I'm sure even that would make a difference. So I'm rambling at this point and thinking through it and processing it for myself. But I know that we talked about Linda's book a lot today, and I want to tell you there's a reason for that. If this is a topic that interests you, if you are listening to this today and you're thinking, this could really benefit me, this is something that I really need, even if it is kind of against my nature right now and I typically don't get outside much, this could really be beneficial for me. Her book is very convincing and very research-backed, full of stories, personal stories, stories of others. So I highly recommend it. I'll link it in the show notes. And that's all I have for today's episode. Remember that you can find me on Substack if you would like the Minimalish Making Room newsletter, which is kind of like a mini blog that I send out twice a month. It's been really fun. I absolutely love it. So many of you joined me there, and I am so happy about that. And I'm also putting out a bonus podcast on Substack, which is called The Minimalish Family. I won't go too much into detail about that on this episode. I did talk about it on the last episode, so you can listen to the beginning of last week's episode if you want to hear more about that. Or you can just go to Substack and you will learn more about it. So you can go to minimalish.substack.com, and I hope to see you there. As always, if you loved this episode, I'm so grateful if you would just share the show with a friend who would love it or on social media somewhere. I'm grateful anytime you share the show. I'm just grateful that you're here and that you're listening. Thank you for hanging out with me here, and I will talk to you right back here again on the next episode.